Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. This is back to school week, but how many kids aren't really going back to school all that much? A new federal report finds absenteeism is a big problem in the New York City public schools. We'll talk about that and a lot more with New York City Schools Chancellor Carmen Farina, who joins us now. Hi, Chancellor. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you. My pleasure to be here.
And we'll get to absenteeism, which, of course, I know is already high on your agenda. But let me start with Common Core. The Common Core standards have been so controversial and I think often misunderstood. What's the status of Common Core in New York City as the school year begins?
Alive and well, as long as people understand that it's not a curriculum, that it's a set of strategies. So for me, Common Core is about learning to speak before an audience, critical thinking skills, being sure that you can follow up whatever you say with evidence, and also just being aware that there are two sides to every story, comparing and contrasting. And this year we're rolling out our new social studies curriculum, which to me is the core of Common Core, content-based information that will be the same across the city. We had over 1,000 teachers attend voluntarily summer programs to learn how to do the program. So I'm really very excited. And when I do town hall meetings and I explain to parents and others that Common Core is about strategies, no matter what comes down the pike, the strategies are the same. They were the same when I was a classroom teacher. They will remain the same.
But then the question comes, how do you measure progress? And President Bush's No Child Left Behind and President Obama's race to the top and support for Common Core are both premised on standardized tests as the central measurement of school success. So how different have they been, in your experience, in terms of their impact on kids getting educated in New York City?
I think looking at the 80 minutes that we put in place 2.5 years ago for teacher professional development has made a big difference.
Because each week?
Each week. And also during the summer, we had over 7,000 teachers attend some form of professional development this year. And to me, that's really the crux, because if you teach well, you almost don't stop to look at the clock and say, well, am I doing this by Common Core? Am I doing it for a multiple test? It's about thinking. It's about having a strong content. We've increased our knowledge of science programs. We have a scope and sequence now for science. We have it for social studies. We've increased our writing curriculum across the city, which I think is a major factor of our scores moving forward. And we have even put in a scope and sequence for high schools that many places did not have. So I think having strong curriculum, having good professional development for teachers, and also engaging parents more. I believe in the homeschool connection. And this year, a lot of the workshops that we've done with the 40 minutes of parent engagement every week has been about teaching parents what their kids are learning in school so they can reinforce it at home.
Are you saying that Common Core, as something that's been generated by the federal government under Obama, has a teacher training component, this 80 minutes a week? Or isn't that more of a New York City
UFT? It's a New York City emphasis. I think when Common Core was originally put in place, it came almost like with everybody should figure out what it is. We took the opposite and said the ideas were good, but the implementation was not that great. So making sure that we have a scope and sequence in writing, which we now have. We put back our professional development program. We now have people who write these curriculums, including cursive writing going into this year. But then we're saying now train teachers in how to do it. STEM is a prime example. STEM is one of the things federal government has asked us to do more of, science, engineering, mathematics. But getting teachers on how to do it and to do it well, that's a whole other developmental tool. And New York City has prided themselves on doing that.
You had a record number of families opting out of standardized tests last school year. Do you have any new plans or any new argument to stem the tide this year?
Well, compared to the rest of the state, our numbers were very small. They were like 2%.
It was more of a suburban thing.
Yeah. But I do think going and reinforcing to parents how the test has changed. The test is shorter. Less questions. It doesn't mean it's less rigorous because the type of questions are the same. And also, I think teachers and students being better prepared for the type of questions they're going to do, I think is important. But I think not having it timed for me was really important, particularly for third graders. I think we saw that for third graders coming to school the day of a test and being stressed about how long you can do it and how much you have to answer is not age appropriate. So I believe that the changes that were made were the right changes. But I do think we're all about multiple ways of looking at student achievement. Certainly their writing skills are important. Their attendance in school is important. I think how they look at extracurricular activities. We've increased those across the board through the city. So there's many ways of looking at student achievement.
New York City Schools Chancellor Carmen Farina with us. We'll take some phone calls for her at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Just to wrap up this piece, do you believe in national standards? Supporters say they're the only way to know how we're doing compared to other school systems and the only way we know how we're doing compared to other countries as a nation. And that's where Common Core is supposed to have originated. But there's so much pushback from the left because of standardized tests. There's so much pushback from the right because they don't like the idea of the federal government telling school districts around the country what the standard should be. Are national standards important with your experience as an educator?
I think there's a certain amount of bodies of knowledge that need to be standardized. I think American history, everyone, no matter what school you graduate, whatever part of the country you graduate, should have an idea of what American history was all about. And I also believe that you should all know the continents of the world and different cultures of the world. So that's my social studies background because that's what I love. But I also think in mathematics, we're certainly finding that a knowledge of algebra, which is one of our initiatives in New York
right.
City this year,
well, sure,
should be crucial.
American history, algebra, of course, those are basic topics. But measured in a standardized way, therefore taught to a way that can be tested for, the same in New York as in Kentucky as in Oregon?
I think depending on where the different states are, it's either going to be more of a challenge. I feel very comfortable in New York that we're doing it right. Look, I travel a lot in Europe, and I know what the level tests are in different countries. And basically, they're used almost to create an elitist society so that if you do well on your level test, you can go to one university or the other. I don't ever want to see this country use it in that way. But I do think that if, you know, we are a mobile society. If you move from one state to another, parents should expect that there's a certain basic knowledge that would be the same in elementary school no matter where you are in this country.
All right. The Eva Moskowitz charter school people constantly send press release emails to me and other media people ripping you and the mayor, including the Renewal Schools program that you've emphasized to fix so-called failing schools. This is one place that absenteeism comes in. Chronic absenteeism in those schools is more than 40%, yes?
In this, no, absolutely not.
Renewal schools?
Renewal schools. In terms of the absenteeism, well, okay, it's down to 39.2, so you're not too far off. I think what we've done in the renewal schools, we have put a real emphasis on parent engagement. We knock on people's doors. We do a lot of workshops at Empowering Point. 2 days of missed school creates a whole week of lost knowledge. So we need to get the message out to parents because in elementary school, it's not the kids who don't get themselves to school. It's the grown-ups. In middle school and high school, a lot more training of students themselves so that they know the importance of going to school. I mean, some schools are actually giving out little alarm clocks. We have apps for this. So I think we're getting better. It was 47% last year, and we're down this year. So our hope is
I read down from 47 the prior year to 43 this year.
No,
you've got it lowered now.
We're down to 39.2 this year from 47.2. And chronic absenteeism plays many roles, but in the renewal schools, you have community schools now. So you have mental health issues, you have poverty issues, you have issues of homelessness, temporary housing. So when you add all those things together, it's not about blaming the student, but how do you mitigate it in ways that has a social consciousness kind of effort? So I think we're going to do much better this year, but the reality is that it is an issue, and we accept that as an issue. But what do we do to – we just can't complain about it. We've got to put things in place to make it better.
And this is not new. When this popped up in the news the other day or the last few weeks, I remembered that when you were on this show last year at this time for the start of the school year, and I asked you your priorities for the year – kind of a no agenda. Okay, you tell me. You're the chancellor. What are your – attendance was at the top of your list. Here's 30 seconds of you from this show last year.
Attendance is a problem in that if you're not in school, you can't learn. So if you have chronic absenteeism, which this year for the first time we're minimizing, and also if you're not in school, you don't learn. And we have to let parents know, and all parents – that taking Mondays off because you had a rough weekend doesn't work. Your child has to be in school every single day. And we've made that one of the major emphasis for all our principals to focus on. And also, it is a way that schools are evaluated. Schools are not just evaluated on the test scores. They're evaluated on attendance.
So if it's still that high, approximately 40% in the renewal schools and high in other schools as well on average, did your efforts not succeed?
Oh, I don't look at it that way at all. You know, something that's chronic takes a long time to make better. And I think what we've done, again, putting in community schools in our most needy schools, making sure that we have special bus services now for students in homeless shelters, temporary housing, because that's a big percentage of our chronic absenteeism. Doing parent workshops. Every parent coordinator in the city was trained this past year on how to follow up with parents whose kids are not coming to school. And I think also one of the things, and I just met with all the superintendents last week, is how do you change the school programming, particularly in middle school, to put the exciting things in the morning? So why not have phys ed first thing in the morning? Why not have arts first thing in the morning? So students will want to come to school for the best thing and then stay for the rest of the day. But this is not going to be something that's solved overnight. But the fact that we're chipping away in a way that makes sense. And also, when I visit a school, one of the first three things I ask a principal, what's your attendance? Now they have it in big signs. If they know I'm coming, it's right outside the principal's office, big sign. We have improved our attendance. So it is, we are moving in the right direction. But obviously, there's more work to be done.
The charter folks say renewal schools are not working, that you want to avoid closing failing schools. That was the Bush-Bloomberg era approach. You want to, they would replace them with new public schools, often charters. You prefer to fix them in place, but they say it isn't really working because look at these numbers, and especially compared to charter schools.
I totally disagree. First of all, I would love to take any one of my negative common people and take them to visit some of the charter schools. I mean, some of the renewal schools. There's one in the Bronx, 154, amazing, double-digit improvements. There's another one in District 5, double-digit improvements, but the atmosphere in that building is wonderful. Look, I'm not Pollyanna. If a school is not working over time, we will close it. We will not phase it out. Phase it out is a slow death. Close means, and we closed four last year, and there'll be more on the agenda this year. Not many, but more. And also, we're trying something relatively new, which is merger and consolidation. We have now seen so many schools not be able to succeed because they have too few students in them. You can't run a high school with 67 children. You can't run an elementary school with one class on a grade. So we're looking at many different ways because a school is a community. It has parents. It has a neighborhood that's invested in it. And we want to make sure we do what's best for that community. So I do think the renewal schools work. I think having the community schools wraparound services renewal. We just met with all the CBOs and the principals to see how they could be more embedded. You now have in all the renewal schools extra guidance counselors, social workers, arts programs. You know, at school, it's not all about academics. It's about having an arts program, a phys ed program. We have put a lot of extra resources so kids have a reason to come to school, but parents also have a place, even on Saturdays, to come and learn English, for example. Cooking classes. Parents have asked for cooking classes. They've asked for Zumba classes, exercise for themselves, and nutrition classes. So, you know, we're a public service, and my idea of a public service is do what the client wants.
But the charters will point to much better test results in math and reading, in similar populations and similar neighborhoods. So let me ask you, what do you think in general about the idea of school choice? You know, Donald Trump is running on this too as his only specific education policy, as far as I can find. Especially for poor kids, the argument goes, if affluent parents can choose schools for their kids, why should poor parents be stuck with their neighborhood schools?
I think neighborhood schools have a lot to offer. I think the ability, especially in elementary school, to walk to your school, to have play dates with kids who go to your own school, and to have a principal and teachers who know your faith-based organization, who know all the ins and outs of your neighborhood. I mean, look at Nadia Lopez, who won one of the prizes for teaching and administration. I think parents should make choices. I think, you know, I certainly believe parent choice is important. But I think it's about what kind of process you want your kids to go through. I think there are many different choices that parents can make, including parochial school, independent schools. There's a whole slew of options out there.
Those are private schools people
right.
pay for.
Right.
But if many more parents are entering charter school lotteries than there are slots for their kids, why not let the charter networks open that many more schools?
I think this is all a process to go through. I also think that we're finding that many, many more of our public schools are going to be competitive with them. So I wish everyone well. And as far as I'm concerned, that all my children, they will all be productive citizens of New York City
sure.
at some point.
But in the meantime, why not let that competition, the theory goes, force more change? If there's the demand for these more charter schools, why not you as chancellor say, well, we want to give the parents what they want?
Well, I think parents also want more pre-K. When we started looking at the options, as parents now have pre-K slots all over the city, many more are opting to continue within the public school sector. So I think we have a lot of public schools. You know, we have public schools with wait lists. I get those emails all the time. So I think it's about letting parents choose, but being very cognizant that we have a lot of good choices in public education.
New York City Schools Chancellor Carmen Farina, my guest on WNYC. We'll take a few phone calls. Looks like Angela in Bushwick says she's calling from her classroom. Is that right, Angela?
Yes, I listen to you every morning.
thank you. And of course, to be fair to you, the kids aren't there yet.
No. She's setting up a classroom, right, Angela?
Yeah, I'm in my classroom. I'm setting up the classroom. So thank you for giving us today to set up our classrooms and our meetings tomorrow. That worked out very well. But I'm glad that the chancellor brought to the forefront the idea that we need to address the whole child. Because I've been teaching in this middle school for the gifted and talented for 26 years. This is my 27th, actually, and I was a student here. There's so many social issues, and you're right. You know, I how can I expect a child to work on a science project when there's bedlam going on in the house? They don't know where they're going to eat. You know, I'm speaking to a child, and like, oh, we don't have the rent this month. Like, we, he's a part of it, you know, that he has to deal with. I'm staying with my aunt right now. So in terms of, you know, giving her or the school a hard time about raising the attendance, she's right. It's going to take time, and these are issues that we have to deal with. Because we have so many things that's going on, especially, you know, the access to social media and other things that are coming into play, and parents using the social media as a babysitting device, we need school psychologists on staff here every day, not once or twice a week, you know, that in my school. We need a regular guidance counselor. And a charter school is unfair for the charter school to compare themselves to the public schools. It's like comparing apples and oranges. We don't have all of the same tools as instructors. The students don't have all of the same tools as students. So you can't compare. You know, I believe that every parent has a right to choose. So there's a place for charter school, but there's definitely a place for public school. And I don't think the solution is get rid of the public schools and make everything charter school. No, because charter school doesn't work for everyone. What are we going to do about the public school? Parent outreach is extremely important. You know, I'm in Bushwick. There's a large Latin population. We have more Latino parents coming in, and they're very involved, and they're at the PTA meetings, and we need to have a translator for them. You know, how do I teach them to use our program to find out the you know, what's for homework? So it has to be more parent outreach. It has to be addressing the entire child. We need school psychologists on staff here every day, not two right. or three times a week. We need to have at least, and like I said, I'm in the middle school. So, you know,
Angela,
takes
let me
time.
Get a response. Thank you,
right.
thank
First
you
of all,
so
Angela,
much, and for your dedication,
Angela,
obviously.
Our secret weapon is you. Teachers like you who have stayed the course, have worked, and are working in difficult neighborhoods. But are you in District 32?
Oh, she hung up.
Oh, okay. Well, I just want to be clear that we are very cognizant of all the issues you brought up. We are starting something called a Single Shepherd Program, which is going to give every student in District 7 and 23, and hopefully eventually every school district in the city, a person, either a social worker or a guidance counselor, who's going to work with the family. It's going to be one person for every 100 families, and they're going to carry right through 12th grade. We want them to start thinking in sixth grade about their path to college and what they need to get there. They need to do their homework. They need to come to school every day. They need to seek harder courses. One of the reasons we're putting AP for All in all our high schools is that in the past, only certain schools had the AP courses, the advanced placement courses. Only certain students were allowed to take them. The Algebra for All initiative, and some of them are actually in Bushwick this year, 100 schools volunteered to have fifth grade teachers be trained in algebra to use this year in a departmentalized way. So our hope is to train teachers in what they need so students will have it. And also parent coordinators have been going to more training, and translation services are now available in more places. So I hear you, but I thank you and many more like you. who are really putting their careers forward to help their students.
Monica in Ossining. You're on WNYC with Chancellor Farina. Hi, Monica.
Hi, good morning. First of all, I'd like to shout out to Carmen Farina, who was my third and fourth grade teacher. I am an educator for college students.
That's how long you've been at this.
Oh, you know, and I get calls from you. What's your name, sweetheart?
Carmen, it's Monica Ortiz from
PS29. Oh, muy bien. Oh, sure. Okay.
So I am an educator. I teach at City College, adult immigrant students. And my question to you, Carmen, is they come to me with many questions about the public schools, the CORE program, and I don't know enough, even though I try to keep my finger in the pie. I do live in Westchester. What could I come back? What piece of advice would you give me for those students that are asking me what to do with their school children who are in public schools? The parents do not understand the material.
You mean the Common Core?
They're having language barriers, et cetera. What would be a good thing next Monday when I go to class and say, I spoke with Chancellor and this is what she said?
Monica, do you remember fourth grade when we taught American history through novels and through interactive? That's what the Common Core really is. What we were doing way back then, which was really off, you know,
Carmen, you were a trailblazer, my dear.
Well, I thank you. But that is really what Common Core is. And I would say, particularly for parents and people who want to, how do you encourage students to have dinner time conversations? How do you make sure that teachers get together to plan curriculum? There's no textbook, and you know we never used those in fourth grade, even way back then when everybody else was. It's got to be real-world learning. That's what Common Core is. The reason Common Core got started was because the business community said that the business people of tomorrow and even of today did not have the skills to compete in the world global economy. And what are the skills you need? You need to be a good writer. I mean, anyone who's going to be teaching today has to write. In our classroom, didn't you write every single day? In every single curriculum?
By the way, I have been published as an undergrad. I have excellent writing skills. And yes, it was an excellent experience back then.
Well, this is bad. Listen, I'm going to have to take you around in my tour around the city so you can vouch for what I did then, because what we did then is really what I'm trying to do now, only on a much higher level.
Thank you for your call, Monica. Thanks. And the chancellor is blushing. She's so happy to hear from you. Kylie in Montclair, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hello. I wanted to go back to the charter issue, Brian, that you brought up, and mm-hmm. I will give just full disclosure. I'm not fully convinced that charter schools have kind of reached their potential of innovation that public schools need, but I'm wondering if the chancellor could maybe let us know maybe the top three innovations that have come out of charter schools aside from, you know, chants and uniforms. And so, and if it's not as innovative as we would want, then how do we make charter schools not just be like a safety option, but be in a place where New York City public schools can actually learn from like innovative practices and try them out and test them, which is what charter schools are actually designed to do?
That's a great question, and I will give you two specific examples. One of the charter networks, KIPP, is doing some very progressive work in terms of not high school graduation, but college retention. You know, how do you get college ready? And one of the things they're working on is how once you get to college, you come back to your high school and you work as mentors. Does mentoring as a strategy work to make high school kids more successful, not just in high school, but also in college? So that's something we're looking at. The other one that we're looking at and actually working with and writing grants with is the Uncommon Network. And what we're doing with them, because there's a lot of charter schools have turnover issues, they created their own teaching trainers programs. And what we're learning from is that what they do particularly well, and I just went to visit one of their charter schools last week, is teacher feedback. You know, teacher feedback is not going into a classroom and saying, gee, that doesn't look like a good lesson, but a very specific, you know, when you were working with those four kids in a reading lesson, maybe you should have thought of X, Y, and Z. And then according to the teacher, who I interviewed last week, she said, and then that administrator comes back 3 days later and said, let me see you implement what I gave you as feedback. And I think that's crucial because, you know, as a former principal, it was the feedback that always was going to make the changes, and we don't do that. We go in a classroom, we make an observation, we write a letter. So I think, you know, and we're working with Mosul and other things in the city this year. But I think those are two that I certainly find. And one of the other things, and I learned this in one of the independent elementary schools that I went to, is where I first saw departmentalization in elementary school. And I thought it was worth looking at for math. I I like having a single teacher all day in second grade. But what was very clear to me, and the principal explained it, I couldn't find that many teachers who love to teach math. But if I had one in fifth grade who loved it, and all the kids in fifth grade were going to learn with that teacher. So that's how we started the algebra program. I took that from that particular school, and now we have it in several of our renewal schools, actually. But I think it's not something you're going to find in a book. It's by my visiting these schools, figuring out what I like that I think we can apply. And by the same token, what they can learn from us. What we have invested in this year in the arts has been unbelievable, close to $30 million. And there's a lot of arts programs that we're using to enhance kids' English language learning skills. We have special arts programs now for our special education students. So how they can learn from us in terms of special populations, I think it's a two-way street.
This is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River, New York and New Jersey Public Radio. We're just about out of time with New York City Schools Chancellor Carmen Farina, but a couple of things real quick before you go. One is we've been doing reporting here on school segregation and integration, and it seems like advocates for integration think you and the mayor have been too passive in this respect, that it's not the priority it should be, considering the research that's been done on the importance of diverse settings, especially for poor kids of color.
I totally disagree. I think we're doing a lot of work on this. I think it really has to be ground level work. It has to be done in conjunction with the public. I mean, I'm going to be doing a ribbon cutting today. I never do ribbon cuttings, but this is one of the schools that I feel is going to be a model for this. This is the Dock Street School in Dumbo, where it's a diverse student body coming in. So I think you have to be very careful when you do this, bringing everyone to the table, lots of public meetings, but it's certainly on my agenda. This year, I attended something in the summer called Arts Boot Camp, where we took students from all over the city who would not have had a chance to go into some of our specialized art schools. And we actually had a master teacher from Lincoln Center and one of our teachers to get them ready for the auditions. We expanded our DREAM program, which is sixth graders who might do well at the standardized test. And also we asked all our specialized schools, and not just the top three.
Meaning Bronx Science, right. Stuyvesant, those
right. Because diversity also means more students with special needs, and it means more English language learners. So we want to see those percentages increase in all our schools across the city.
But it's not just getting into the elite schools. It's the day-to-day segregation in the neighborhood schools.
Well, in the neighborhood schools, in elementary school, it's certainly more of your zone school. But also we have moved totally away from, when I was a teacher, track classes, homogeneous grouping. Heterogeneous grouping is 80% of the schools in New York City today. So I think that's moving in the right directions. And lots
that's within
of
a school.
Within a school. And then I think in terms of neighborhoods.
But the schools are separate. Yeah.
Well, this is also one of the reasons we're looking at rezoning in different parts of the city. And that's part of what we're working on. And I think you're going to see more of that this year. But everything has to be done with the community. And I think having a lot more town hall meetings. Last year, I did close to 50 town hall meetings. I expect to do just as many this year. More talking to people, listening to people so that we go in together with the same goal.
And last thing, so many teachers leave in their first 5 years. What are your most important teacher retention tools, and are you having any success in breaking that cycle in our last minute?
I think the reality is that this is one of my top three priorities for this year. I now have a teacher advisory group that's going to actually make a list of recommendations. We're looking at many different things, but the teaching fellows this year and the training they had, more professional development for teachers, they like that. I think we're also looking at, in renewal schools, we actually had more teachers who opted in than opted out this year. We have over 200 teacher leaders in the renewal schools. That never happened before. So I do think giving teachers more prestige for the job they do, and in cases where they are highly effective, encouraging them to move from schools that are not struggling to schools that they are struggling, but also celebrating them over and over again to let people know that teaching is a noble profession.
Respect.
Oh, absolutely. Dignity and respect and encouragement, lots of encouragement.
New York City Schools Chancellor Carmen Farina, good luck this school year. Thank you for coming.
Oh, thank you
on.
So much.